Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. But, Jim, here in the Washington, D.C. area, before we get to the martinis, it's Tuesday. Friday, we're going to get some weather. It could be a lot of snow. It could be a little snow. It could be a mix. It could be nothing at all. And already the region is practically paralyzed. So I hope you're going to enjoy.
Buy your milk and bread now. Stockpile your supplies. They're calling for wintry mix.
Greg, we need to form a band called Wintry Mix.
Oh, man. It's always fun. All right, on to the good martini now. This is courtesy of Hot Air, which got the story courtesy of the Daily Beast. It turns out the Pentagon is going to consider retroactively demoting retired General David Petraeus after he admitted to giving classified information to his biographer/mistress while he was still in uniform. Three people with knowledge of the matter told the Daily Beast. The decision now rests with Secretary of Defense Ash Carter, who is said to be willing to consider overruling an earlier recommendation by the Army that Petraeus not have his rank reduced. Such a demotion could cost the storied general hundreds of thousands of dollars and deal an additional blow to his once pristine reputation. In addition to the fact that Petraeus committed a potentially very serious crime here by sharing classified information with his biographer/mistress, Paula Broadwell, it's interesting that it's essentially the same crime the FBI is investigating Hillary Clinton for, with not securing classified information that came through that private server. And Ed Morrissey, who wrote the piece for Hot Air, concludes the piece by saying, "Are people of Hillary Clinton's fame and esteemed reputation immune to punishment? Perhaps Ash Carter might want to provide Loretta Lynch with a lesson on ethics and accountability before taking a second bite out of David Petraeus. Or maybe, just maybe, that's Carter's point." So, Jim, interesting to see what will happen to Petraeus, but even more interesting what sort of precedent it could set for this long investigation into Hillary.
Most people look at David Petraeus and feel mixed feelings. Inexcusable what he did, separate from the affair, giving her access to classified information, is just remarkably boneheaded. Plea bargain down to a misdemeanor, you know, pays a $100,000 fine, which is a, you know, significant chunk of change. 2 years of probation. And the real challenge was, you know, losing access to classified material, which means he's going to lose some of his appeal on the as a consultant. Although keeping in mind, he has at least one teaching gig. He'll have any university would be thrilled to have him on staff. He's going to get a book deal. He's got the speaking gigs. David Petraeus is going to be fine. In fact, I would say it's not unthinkable he could end up returning to government service someday at the request of a president who could say, look, you know, he's paid his price and all that stuff. The message from Ash Carter, though, is that if Petraeus is going to get hit twice for this, you can't decide, oh, Hillary didn't do anything wrong. This is nothing. This is not important. And everything's, you know, fine. In fact, I kind of have this feeling that this seems like a signal from Ash Carter or maybe other people in uniform to say, look, you know, if we take it seriously over here, you can't not take that seriously over there. And we will see how it shakes out. But one of the easy contrasts in this argument is the more that Hillary insists she did nothing wrong, it seems like her wrongdoings in terms of handling mishandling classified information are on a much larger scale than Petraeus's. And the consequences for her so far have been none. Now, we'll see if there are any. But it's very hard to argue that David Petraeus committed a crime and Hillary Clinton did not.
Now, Jim, David Petraeus obviously could have been hit with a truckload of felonies here. Ultimately, it got pled down to misdemeanors. If it's misdemeanors that end up on the plate for Hillary Clinton, is the political damage effectively the same?
That's a really good question. I'd actually been arguing that in a way, like the worst case scenario for Hillary is she's indicted on, you know, significant charges. If she's not indicted, it's almost as damaging, because I think you and I can imagine what Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or just about any Republican candidate would say. Because one way or another, that FBI report is going to come back. If the FBI report recommends prosecution and Obama's Justice Department decides no, that's, you know, the argument will be, look, she should have been indicted, but only a corrupt Department of Justice spared her. In a way, actually, what you're describing there, Greg, I think being indicted on misdemeanors and paying a fine and things like that might be the best case scenario for her. and that it gets dealt with, but not in a way, probably not severely enough to derail her presidential hopes.
Hmm. Well, let's hope I'm wrong about that then. Okay, on to the bad martini now. And as we mentioned on Friday, one of the big dust-ups from the most recent presidential debate was towards the very end between Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz as they talked about who stood where on the immigration fight and who's the bigger flip-flopper and so forth. Marco Rubio was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd over the weekend, and it seems like this came up towards the very end of the interview, where Chuck Todd asked Rubio where he still stands on what to do about the millions of people illegally in the country.
Let me ask you, by the way, quickly on the 11 million. Are you still for finding a way for them to legally stay in the United States?
Yeah, look, if you're a criminal alien, no, you can't stay. If you're someone that hasn't been here for a very long time, you can't stay.
Wait a minute. Define criminal alien.
You have to have a reasonable solution.
Define criminal alien. Isn't anybody who's here illegal? Okay, so not because some people argue
immigration law, right? I mean, obviously, but no. But I've said that before, Todd. That's been convinced. I mean, the a felon, someone who's committed a crime, a non-immigration related, obviously, and that's what I've talked about in the past. Mm-hmm. So I do believe. I don't think you're going to round up and deport 12 million people. Here's what I've said, though. It is very clear now more than ever that we are not going to be able to do anything on people that are here illegally until we first prove to people that illegal immigration is under control and America is safe.
Jim, it's hard to convince a lot of people not to come illegally if, unless you're a felon, you get to stay. So that's a pretty low bar he's asking to clear here.
Marco. The notion of whether illegal immigrants have broken the law would seem pretty clear in the title, illegal immigrants, doesn't it? You know, like, and so, yeah, you're right. I could understand the argument. Let's start with those who've committed violent crimes. Let's start with those who we know are indisputably threats. But this is just, you know, I suppose we could salute Rubio for sticking by a position that he's got to know is unpopular with Republican primary voters. But at the very least, like, what do we get from letting these people stay into the country? And I feel like, oh, they're you know, good-hearted Americans, or they want to be Americans, and they're you know, busboys, and they've got the American dream and all that kind of stuff. But their first act in this country was to break the law. I have a very hard time believing, oh, you really want to be a good American if you don't respect the law there. And so it's frustrating to see this from Rubio. He's got to know that this is, you know, probably the weakest point of his argument, and just the Republican base does not understand why we have to bend over backwards who have broken the law and who continue to demonstrate disregard for the law every day that they're here. And this idea that, oh, if we just bring them out of the shadows, everything will be fine. I'm just not buying it. If you want to argue prioritize the violent ones first, fine. But if Rubio does not win the nomination, I don't think there's any way to argue. This is what cost him the nomination. And he obviously, you know, he moved in his position from when he was with the Gang of Eight to now. Why he couldn't go that extra mile, either he's very principled or he's just politically very foolish.
It's fascinating because obviously you have the polar opposites here. You have Trump, who wants to deport everybody illegally, and a lot of folks who don't want to do that, saying it's not possible logistically. You're kicking down doors, and it looks like a police state on one hand. And then they say, well, you can't even afford all this. It would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. The question never seems to pop up, well, how many can we deport?
We did 400,000 in 1 year a couple of years ago. So conceivably, you know, we could do at least that every year for a sustained period of time. And who knows, if you commit more resource, you might get to it. Even more, Greg, by the way, you notice the always lament kicking down doors. Greg, don't police kick down doors? Like, it's kind of part of the job, whether it's a, you know, drug raid, SWAT team, hostage, you know, like, police kick down doors. That's going to happen. It's part, you know, knocking gently doesn't always work for the police. So they're going to have to do it. I don't understand this argument is sponsored by the Dorm Frame Makers of America or something like that. But there's just, you know, like, oh, it's such an ugly image. Well, don't these folks watch cop shows? Right? They're kicking in doors all the time.
Yes, and usually, so they do make mistakes sometimes, but usually they're kicking down the doors of people who have, you know, committed a crime.
Maybe, you know, it's like, you know, we kick down the wrong door, you get a free door, right? Like that, let's make that. There's one Trumpian executive order I'll be fine with, and then we can start doing all the deportations we want to do.
Well, from one crime to another crime, and that is the lack of diversity in Oscar nominations. The Oscars, I believe, are towards the end of next month, but the nominations came out recently, and there is a whole hullabaloo about the lack of diversity among the nominees, particularly in the acting categories. As a result, we have now boycotts from at least Spike Lee and Jada Pinkett Smith. Jim, obviously, it's a liberal atmosphere. People want to see diversity, I guess, in the nominees. It seems, though, that when there's a prominent actor or a prominent movie involving black characters, I'm thinking of 12 Years a Slave or Django Unchained, and we've obviously seen black Oscar winners over the last decade. What's really going on here?
I see this headline, and I'm just like, meh. You know, of all the problems in the world, this doesn't strike me as a really huge deal. Now, if I were Samuel L. Jackson, I'd be very offended by this. If I were an African-American actor who thought I had turned in a really good performance and I had gotten snubbed, I'd be really upset. And probably one of the examples, Michael B. Jordan was the one who was in Creed. People said he gave a really good performance. People said Will Smith was really good in Concussion. Didn't see either one of those. Couldn't tell you whether that's a fair gripe. But in the end, how many people have been really terribly unfairly snubbed by this, Greg? Like a half dozen? There aren't that many people who said, oh, I gave a spectacular performance and I didn't get nominated. No, you only get 5 nominations. So I was kind of struck by this. The Jada Pinkett Smith is going to boycott it. She's the wife of Will Smith, who felt like he had, deserved a nomination for his performance this year. But he's been nominated twice before. And both times he lost to another African-American actor. So the idea that the Academy Awards have some sort of systemic or consistent bias against African-American actors and actresses doesn't seem to hold up here. Now, as I mentioned in The Jolt, you could make an argument that a lot more people went to see Creed than they spent to see any one of the best actor movies other than The Martian. Matt Damon was nominated for that one. Like almost nobody went to see Steve Jobs that had – technically the actor's name is Michael Fassbender, Greg.
Yes.
But to me, he's always Magneto. So because of that, it was this stunning realization that Steve Jobs, in fact, was Magneto. But the point being that this strikes me as the most inside baseball example of an injustice in the entire world. Yet this is giving an enormous amount of attention, and people are really upset about this. And there's pressure on Chris Rock to not host the actors anymore. And I'm content to let Hollywood argue about that. And if they let them sort it out. I don't understand why I'm just expected to rush to the aid of the Academy Awards. They have been cultivating this culture of grievance for so long. Let the Academy deal with it. I will say, Greg, when it comes to the true injustices in our society, shouldn't we really be focusing on what matters most? And to me, Greg, it's that didn't Harrison Ford deserve a Best Supporting Actor nomination for coming back as Han Solo?
You got to think
so. Didn't Star Wars deserve a Best Picture nomination? That's injustice right there.
Let the
I'm sure right now people are furiously writing letters to me. It's like, Mr. Garrity, what about the third act?
Well, like you mentioned, it's almost kind of fun to watch a liberal institution kind of get skewered over its own politics on this sort of thing, like the Academy is. At the same time, I don't know if you saw this today, Jim, but Jada Pinkett Smith now has been called out by the aunt from The Fresh Prince for thinking that she ought to be entitled to Oscar nominations, but the fact that she even has a prominent job in Hollywood ought to be gratitude enough. So a little bit of hostility in the Banks house going on there.
Well, again, how many? There are only 5. This is ironically, this is kind of like the Pro Bowl arguments, right? And whoever you want to put on, you should be taking off. I also went back and checked. They're all the Best Actor nominations. The only one who won is Redmayne for... was the Danish girl, the girl who ate the Danish, something, I don't know, but some art house flick that I'm never going to see, and most of the listeners probably are never going to see either. If you happen to go see it and enjoy it, good for you. Leonardo DiCaprio is the one who's expected to win it this year for the one where he's intimate with a bear, and that he's but he's been nominated 5 times and never won, and so everybody's thinking, okay, this year is the makeup year, right? So Stallone got the okay, he just he deserves one by now. Like all of these award nominations usually end up being some sort of who's mad at who or something like that. So, if you're a successful African-American actor or actress and you think you gave a great performance and you feel snubbed, I'm sorry. I know how that feels. It stinks, but you can't if your whole career is based upon getting one of these 5 nominations, just enjoy the work that you do. I can't understand why you turn it into this, this now national scandal here that or alternately pick which one of the 5 you think shouldn't have gotten it. And I'm sure everyone's looking at Michael Fassbender. That's fair to say he doesn't deserve it because look, he may have done a great job. Nobody saw the movie.
Yeah, well, that seems to be pretty common among Best Picture nominees. The Danish Girl just reminds me of a movie the folks on Seinfeld would end up seeing because something went horribly wrong with their plans to see Prognosis Negative or Death Blow.
Danish Girl sounds like the cliched historical drama movie that when they need a fictional title for an Oscar winner in some other in the TV show or movie, that's the one that they use. I would also point out, while we're on the topic of the Oscars, because that's exactly why everyone tunes into Three Martini Lunch.
Right.
Who's the one who was in Titanic?
Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet. So Kate Winslet won her Oscar, it was year before that, for The Book Thief, in which she played someone who never learned to read. Greg, do you remember Wayne's World?
Yes.
In which his cliched Oscar bait scene and showed him, for absolutely no reason whatsoever, breaking down, crying, screaming he never learned how to read. And at the bottom of the screen, it's flashing Oscar clip, Oscar clip. Yeah. So she actually did that, and she actually won. So there you go.
Oh, people will be studying Wayne's World for generations to see how to win an
Oscar. It's not Die Hard, but.
No, of course not. No, never. That should have won an Oscar, but that's a whole other story. Jim, on that note, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.